The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome. Good evening. Is the volume okay? Is it? Okay, good. You know, sometimes with the way we explore meditation practice here, there's a lot of emphasis on sitting quietly with our eyes closed and observing what's happening in our experience. And we may miss, actually, that a big piece of what the practices or the path of practices that the Buddha taught includes a lot about relationship. Not only relationship to ourself, I mean, we can look at the exploration of cultivating a quality of allowing attention. Really, that is what we're exploring with the mindfulness practice. We're exploring coming into a relationship with ourselves that is one of friendliness, caring, allowing, and ultimately, I think, of love. In some ways, I think of the meditation practice being one of the most kind and loving things that we can do for ourselves. And so the practice does encourage us to come into a new kind of relationship to ourselves. But it also, on the path explicitly in the Buddhist teaching, there is an encouragement to explore our external relationships, our relationships with other people, with the planet, with our cultures, with animals, to how we relate, how do we relate to the world? There's a teaching, a sutta. I have been kind of emphasizing suttas recently, and I thought I'd bring a sutta in here, although it's not the main frame of the talk today. But there's a teaching that I'll share with you. It's a teaching story, really. It's and the Buddha is talking about two acrobats that are practicing together. And these two acrobats, there's a master acrobat and an apprentice acrobat. And the master acrobat is offering some teachings to the apprentice acrobat and says something like, "Come, climb the bamboo pole and stand on my shoulders. You protect me, and I'll protect you. Thus, guarded by one another, protected by one another, we'll display our skills, collect our fee, and come down safely from the bamboo pole." And so the teacher is expressing this teaching of look out for, in this dangerous thing that we're doing, this practicing our acrobat skills together, you look out for me and I'll look out for you, and that way we'll be safe. And the student said, the apprentice said, "Oh, I don't know if that's the way to do it." And, you know, can you kind of imagine a student having the guts to speak up and say, "I disagree with you." The student says, "You protect yourself and I'll protect myself, and that way we'll be safe." And the Buddha said, actually, both are useful. It's interesting because the first thing the Buddha says is, the apprentice is right. We do have to protect ourselves in our practice. This is one of the first things we need to look at. I will protect myself, and by doing that, I will protect others. How do I protect myself? That's by practicing mindfulness. In practicing mindfulness, protecting myself, I protect others. So using the tool of mindfulness, we are protecting ourselves, guarding ourselves by learning about ourselves and seeing what is arising here. And so we use this skill of learning about our hearts and minds, and that not only protects ourselves, but it protects others. And we'll talk about this a little bit more in what I'd like to explore today. And then he also confirms that what the teacher said was right. He said, and how is it that by protecting others, one protects by oneself? He says, through the practice of patience, non-harming, loving kindness, and empathy. Through those practices, by protecting others, one protects oneself. And so pointing to some relational qualities, mindfulness being more of an inner quality of observing what's happening here, and these qualities of patience, harmlessness, loving kindness, and empathy are more relational qualities. And so both are emphasized in this teaching about the acrobats. And I think in various ways, in many ways, the teachings of the Buddha emphasize relational practice. Maybe it's part of the an artifact of the way partly the teachings of the Buddha were brought to the West, in that the teachers, the Western teachers, went to practice in monasteries and learned the meditation practice, and then came back to establish meditation practice. And so that's been the emphasis of the teaching in the West, is the meditation practice, and it's very useful, as the Buddha points to. It creates the container whereby we are protecting ourselves, and that will ripple out such that we protect others. But he also taught a lot about relational practices, practices of generosity, of caring, of connection, of giving in relationship, practices of non-harming, of ethical conduct, of taking care that our behavior is not creating harm for others or for ourselves. And then also the exploration of the teachings of the Brahmaviharas, the qualities of love, of compassion, of sympathetic joy, and equanimity. All of these also, the first three primarily being relational practices. So these teachings of generosity, of ethics, of non-harming, and of love are really woven through the teachings of the Buddha. We can find them all along the path, the Eightfold Path, the Noble Eightfold Path. Actually, in one talk I did some time ago, I looked at how might the Eightfold Path be seen as a development of relationship. And I found that every single factor of the Eightfold Path includes some factor or some way in which there is relationship that is cultivated. And so I'd like to talk about some of these relational practices, just to bring this this part of our practice kind of into the forefront of our minds. Really, this is this is a lot of what we do in our lives. We spend more of our lives in relationship with people than we do sitting silently on the cushion meditating. And so finding ways to bring the practice alive in relationship is a beautiful extension to our practice. And it also requires and supports the cultivation of mindfulness, because in order to practice these, we have to be aware, we have to remember, we have to be mindful. And so first I'll talk a little bit about generosity, of giving, of this quality of the open heart, of the heart that is it is a practice that does foster connection with others, this quality of a heart that freely handed offers of itself. And not just, I mean, there's so many different kinds of things that we can give, not just financial, but you know, really of ourselves, giving of ourselves, of our time, of our service, of our conduct, giving of our kindness, giving of our attention, One of the big lessons from my own practice has been just what a gift it is to offer presence of being. So cultivating, again, this is a way in which practicing mindfulness, cultivating that sense of presence in myself can be a gift for somebody else. I was having a conversation with somebody one day, and that person wandered into some terrain of a difficult memory. This is just a friend I was talking to. It wasn't a student. It was just a friend I was with. It was before I was even a teacher. And this friend wandered into some really challenging terrain, and I just said, you know, I'm happy to just sit here with you. And my friend said, well, I don't know what to say. I said, well, I don't need you to say anything. I'm happy to just be here with you. And in that willingness to have somebody be with him, he kind of like let himself kind of go into the space, but somehow felt like he could be there with it in a different way. And he kind of just broke down, and he went through some kind of process sitting there. We sat there together in silence for, I don't know, 10 or 15 minutes while he just felt what he was feeling. And he came back to me a few days later and said, what were you doing? And I said, I was just trying to be with you. I was just trying to be as present as I could be. He actually asked me, he said, were you doing metta practice? Were you practicing loving kindness while I was going through that? I said, no, I was actually just practicing being with you, being as present as I could be. And it was almost like it created some kind of a ballast for him to be able to meet that experience. And I really got what a gift it is, this practice of mindfulness. Right there in that moment, seeing how the Acrobat Sutta was coming into play, by protecting myself, by practicing mindfulness, I was offering a gift of protection for other. And so the Buddha offered a lot of teachings around giving, in particular around how we give. Not just, you know, he said it's not so actually important what we give, it's more important how our heart is as we give. And he listed a bunch of different reasons why we might give. He listed a lot of things we might give because we want something in return, because we think it's the right thing to do, because we understand it supports letting go. So he actually offered that there are both wholesome and unwholesome reasons why we might give something. And we might just give because we want something back. And so he encouraged us to look at our reasons for giving. And what I will say is that for most of us, probably our motivations for giving are not going to be completely pure. We may have some of that, really a genuine wish for sharing and offering something, but still kind of hope that somebody will give that there'll be some kind of reciprocation. You know, that there is, we have a very strong give and take mentality in our culture. And so while that may be present, we also I think have a I think our culture is actually pretty generous too in many ways. And so we hold both in our hearts, the wish to be sharing and caring and supportive of others in what they might need, and we also may want something back. And so I think with what we can practice there is with the mindfulness, again, recognizing how the mindfulness supports us in these practices, we can explore understanding or recognizing, yeah, there's mixed motivations here. I see that I want something back. And I also see a genuine wish to help and support this person. as we can hold both, maybe we can land a little more fully in the more freely offering, free offering of something, and recognize, yeah, well, I do want something back, but maybe I can hold that lightly. Maybe I can remind myself that there's a way in which the heart that is freely giving, really what that is doing is it's counteracting that tendency towards greed, towards wanting things to be a certain way. And so recognize that the value of offering things freely, recognizing that it supports us in our learning to let go of that tendency to want to hold on and have things be our certain way, a certain way. So the Buddha talked about giving gifts with integrity, looking at what the heart of integrity is in offering a gift. And also he encouraged us to take care in how we are cultivating. That essentially he pointed to the offering of a gift is the cultivation of a relationship, and you should take care in that cultivation. He said you should offer, the offering should be given in a way that doesn't belittle the other person or hurt the other person. That's an interesting reflection. How might we be giving? Might we be giving in a way that is belittling? I mean, the Buddha pointed to this 2,600 years ago, this possibility of a kind of maybe giving in an offhand way or giving something that is kind of an indication of something that, you know, some view or opinion you have about the person that betrays a lack of respect. There's you know, certain motivations or views or opinions may be conveyed by offering particular things. And so looking at that, are we hurting somebody or belittling somebody in how we're giving? And so to give with warmth, friendliness, and respect, this again, to cultivate some of these beautiful qualities and to cultivate that in relationship. This to me is such a beautiful thing that the Buddha really was pointing us to caring, warmth, and respect in the cultivation of our relationship. And the other piece that I find interesting about his teachings about how we give, there's more teachings about how we give than what we give. I think that's interesting in and of itself. But he also says we should give without adversely affecting others, which I just mentioned, but also without adversely affecting ourselves. And so again, to look at both sides of the relationship, you know, that it can be sometimes that we're finding that we have an inspiration to give, either of our time or of our finances, and maybe we need to take care with our time or our finances to take care of ourselves. Again, this recalling of this Acrobat Sutta of taking care of ourselves, we take care of others, to not forget that we need to take care of ourselves in this practice of generosity. And so to me, this speaks a little bit to looking at our priorities as we practice with giving. You know, what are our priorities? To hold our priorities for ourselves in equal measure with how we are relating and holding the priorities of others. And then another piece that I find useful in terms of a practice of generosity, You know, it can be useful to play with a practice of generosity to see where and how might I frame relationship through generosity. Actually, a lot of how we are in relationship can be understood as a kind of a beautiful giving and receiving. And so to explore how we might frame our relationships in terms of generosity. You know, one of the teachings the Buddha offers on this, he says, even if one throws away the rinsings of a pot or cup into a village pool or pond, a pot or cup that has had food in it, even if one throws away the rinsings of a pot or cup into a village pool or pond, wishing that the living beings there may live on them, even this would be a source of benefit, not to speak of gifts to human beings. And so really pointing out there that even that simple act of rinsing out a pot that has some food in it and throwing the rinse water on the ground might be thought of a relationship with the beings on the ground. To take care with how you throw it on the ground, not to throw it on an anthill or something, to throw it in a place where it might nourish beings that would be there. To think about even simple actions in this way. And so this has prompted me to think about how so much of my actions and my activities can be framed in this way. I was helped along this by a colleague of mine. We were, it was a group of us, we were out having dinner together, and one of my fellow teachers was paying the bill, and he said, have you ever thought about the fact that this act that we're doing here of offering not only the tip, but just paying for the meal, that this is an act of giving, because in an indirect way, and I think so much of our relationships have become indirect through this avenue of money and purchase. But he said, you know, have you ever thought about how we are actively supporting that this is a gift that we are giving by coming to this place, eating our meal, and paying for it? That we are supporting the people who work here. I said to him, I hadn't thought of that. You know, that wasn't a way in which I conceived of paying. I thought of it as receiving something for what I was paying. And so it was a very almost selfish interaction. It's like I pay. And to think about how much of our lives is in relationship. That even that, as the Buddha said, throwing away the rinsings of the pot, you know, even the offering of the normal payment for a meal is a form of connection, of relationship, and in a way of generosity. It's an indirect form of generosity. And if your heart can open to just how much giving there is in our lives, reframing our encounters through this lens of offering instead of receiving, there's a whole different feeling to being in the world and being in relationship. And so I began looking at things like that, and another, helped along by another teaching by Ajahn Amaro, now the abbot in Amravati Monastery in England. He said that, you know, you might practice the generosity of, while you're driving in the car, allowing somebody to have an easy merge, backing off of the accelerator and letting somebody in. That can be framed as an act of generosity and kindness. And that recognizing it as such supports us. Recognizing it as an act of generosity, as an act of kindness. It's like that movement has a rebound effect on our hearts. And this is an important way in which, you know, some of these actions of both of giving and of non-harming, and I'll talk about non-harming in a moment, but how they impact us if we are exploring, recognizing when we do things and framing them through that lens of giving. You know, it's like, okay, backing off on the accelerator to let somebody have an easy merge, feeling a sense perhaps of the generosity of that act, of the kindness of that act. Maybe we aren't feeling it fully in the moment, the kindness of that, but if you're doing that action with an intention to connect to that quality, that will have a rebound effect on the mind. As we, the quality or the function in the mind of intention, as we act with a particular intention, I'm doing this action with the intention of cultivating a heart that is willing to give. If our actions are kind of associated with that intention strengthens and creates the quality more in our hearts. Very different motivation than backing off on the accelerator because we feel like we have no other choice, you know, that we've been crowded out. You know, so just the, you know, almost a sense of anger in the backing off on the accelerator. I've done that. I know that's possible. Like, you are just butting in, you know? Like, that heart is then being cultivated. You know, if the intention is happening with the intention of frustration or anger, that's what's being cultivated in that moment. And so we can consciously incline our minds towards generosity, towards kindness. And, you know, even something as simple as inclining towards a connection of smiling at somebody. Now, this is a kind of an offering. A friendly smile can be a kind of an offering. And I practiced this for a period of time while I was walking in the neighborhood during a particular stretch of time. I walked about the same time of day and seemed to run into the same people regularly. And I decided I would practice, if people made eye contact, I would practice smiling. And this was, at first it felt a little awkward, but very quickly it became more natural. And what I found is that the offering of the smile was almost always met by a response of a smile. And when I was present for that, not only did I offer the smile, but I received a smile in return. And while that sounds like a very small thing, when I was present for it, there were waves of delight through my system in receiving a smile. At one point I was like, wow, you know, how long does that last? I timed it. You know, it's like 30, 40 seconds, that wave of delight from the offering of a smile and the receiving of a smile. It was quite beautiful to see just how simple this practice of giving and receiving can be. And one of the things we can offer, too, one of the deepest things we can offer, aside from our mindfulness and our presence, is a gift of non-harming, a gift of ethical conduct. And this is not, I don't think about ethical conduct as being, the way it's framed in the teachings sounds very like the Ten Commandments, you know, it's like, we'll refrain from doing this, refrain from killing, refrain from taking what's not given, refrain from harming with sexuality. And so it has that flavor of like the Ten Commandments, the basic ethical teachings in the Buddhist practice. And yet the way it's held to me has a different flavor, because it's not, again, it's not so much about just blindly trying to rigidly follow these as rules, but it is more about exploring and opening to how am I in relationship? Do I want to cause harm? Mostly we don't want to cause harm, actually. When we end up causing harm, often it's out of thoughtlessness, a non-awareness, a non-attention to what's happening, or a not understanding how something might be causing harm. But what often happens when we do cause harm is that we, you know, almost like try to justify it or somehow make the other person responsible. Well, I didn't intend to cause harm, so it's their doing that they felt this as pain or something. And so we don't own, or so much we don't recognize our own part in how harm is created. And so in looking at these ethical guidelines, these precepts that are offered as kind of the groundwork of ethical conduct in Buddhist practice, one thing we can hold or recognize is that following these guidelines will support us in the direction of non-harming. And I think for most of us, we are in the place where we don't want to harm somebody. And so we can look at this as a support for helping us to not harm. I sometimes have used these almost as mindfulness bells. If I am in the getting ready to do something that is going to break one of these precepts, you know, pick up my shoe and kill a spider on the wall, which I haven't now done in ages because I've gotten more into the practice of like, oh, I'll capture the spider. I'll take a glass and I'll capture the spider and I'll put it outside. So, you know, but for a good stretch of time, as I would find myself kind of habitually moving to kill an insect of some kind or not respect life in some way, it would be like a mindfulness bell, this memory of these precepts. And beginning this kind of reorientation around respecting life. And yet, you know, even the simplicity, simplicity is the right word, but looking at, you know, these guidelines, you know, refraining from taking life. You know, if everybody on the planet at this moment decided that we would follow that guideline only with respect to human beings. Everybody on the planet decided, I will no longer kill another human being. This world would be so different. And so another way we can recognize is, rather than beating ourselves up also for the times, like if we mistakenly forget and swat a mosquito or something, reflecting on the ways in which we are engaged in non-harming. It's not a small thing to refrain, to consciously refrain from killing other human beings. And so appreciating how you are engaged in these precepts, rather than kind of highlighting in your mind where, you know, where you are kind of falling down there, and yet still looking at how might I not create harm in this world. If we're looking at finding ways to free ourselves from suffering, and this is really the path that the Buddha walked, he explored for himself, you know, is it possible to be free from suffering in this life? And one of the things he realized is that, well, to walk that path, I need to not create suffering externally too. And so this is a support for our own hearts. Again, this give and take that's expressed in this Acrobat Sutta, that as we protect others by not harming others, we are protecting ourselves from regret, remorse, from the harm that would come to us from having created harm. And so we are, through protecting ourselves. And we also may experience some beautiful uplifting or beautiful qualities of mind as we recognize, and again reflect on, the Buddha encouraged us to reflect on, when we are not harming others, we are giving safety, the gift of safety, to countless beings. So this is another way in which we can frame this practice of non-harming as a gift. We receive the bliss of blamelessness. And so this this interrelationship, again, between the intention and the action is really important with respect to ethical conduct. If we're holding these guidelines as simply kind of rules to hold rigidly to, we may be almost inadvertently reinforcing a kind of a rigid mind or an aversive mind or a constricted mind. I can't do this, I can't do that. Or, you know, kind of holding ourselves to not be causing harm, then it's not supporting the kind of qualities that we're more in the direction of cultivating with the practice. So holding the intention to non-harming, it said with each of these precepts, there's a corresponding wholesome quality that we can hold in our hearts that goes along with each one. And so refraining from killing, we can hold the quality of compassion as being an intention in our hearts. Refraining from taking what's not given, we can hold the quality of contentment in our hearts. Refraining from creating harm through sexuality, we can hold the quality of integrity in our hearts. Refraining from false speech, the quality of truthfulness. And refraining from intoxicants, the quality of clarity. And so this, the interrelationship of how we act in the world. You know, we can act with the intention to non-harming, and that will, if we are holding it with the intention to cultivating these beautiful qualities, that will have a rebound effect on our minds. I found this for myself as I was practicing with the insects in my kitchen and not trying to not kill the ants in my kitchen. I discovered that the practice of that over the course of many days, I had an infestation of ants in my kitchen at one point, and it was an act of patience to try to not kill those ants. I found where they were coming in, and I began this process of creating a corral with soap around all the ants, and then slowly making that corral smaller and smaller, kind of inching them back to their now exit point. And then when there were no more ants, I would like seal that place up. And so I did this, and this would take a long time. And over some days, I kind of got impatient with this. And so I started taking a piece of paper and scooping the ants up as many as I could get, and then like depositing them back by their entry point. And that made it go a little quicker. And what I began, as I was doing this, I began noticing some very odd behavior by some of the ants in near the exit point. One of the ants, in what I could only interpret was a gesture of general alarm, stood up on its two back legs and began like scanning the environment like this. It was, I've never seen an ant do anything like this, but, and it, I understood this was an anthropomorphizing this thing that it seemed like this ant was very alarmed. It's like, you know, how did I get here? You know, I'm used to following a trail of scent, you know? And so, but what that moment did, when I saw that ant doing that, a huge burst of compassion for these ants came into my heart. And I hadn't actually even been trying to cultivate compassion in them, in that action. I had really been trying to cultivate non-harming. But I did see the connection between that quality of compassion and the non-harming. And then there's the practices of love, the actual practices of metta and compassion and sympathetic joy and equanimity. Again, you know, pointing to how important these are in our relationships with each other. There are teachings about reflecting on holding in our hearts the well-wishing for ourselves and for others. And this teaching on for ourselves and others, you know, I think in it does begin in this teaching of non-harming, because that is a connection. Again, you know, the practice of generosity and of ethics begins to create a connection for us with others, and we begin to feel this relationship. So the open heart, the heart that feels connection, this is the beginning of the quality of metta. And as we reflect on non-harming, as we reflect on a teaching that the Buddha offered his own son, you know, reflect before you act. Is this going to create affliction for yourself or other? If it is, don't do it. Reflect while you're doing something. Is it going to create affliction for yourself or other? If it is, then stop doing it. And after you've done it, reflect. Did this create affliction for self or other? And if it did, then make amends and undertake restraint in the future, it says. And so this practice of, again, looking externally and internally creates a relationship, creates a connection around reflecting on, is this going to create harm for somebody? Is this going to make somebody else suffer? When we start thinking about this, when we start thinking about, is this going to harm somebody else? It's almost like we do a swap. We swap ourselves for other. And that's about the best we can do, essentially, because we can't know. We can't know directly if it's going to harm other, but we can reflect on, well, if I was in their shoes, as best as I can know, would I want to be treated that way? You know, this kind of teaching is found in so many different traditions. The golden rule: do unto others as you would have them to do unto you. You know, this notion of thinking, is this going to create harm? Creates connection, and this is one form of a way in which we can practice this quality of connection and love, to think of swapping ourselves for others. To think of how would I like to be treated there? The quality of metta is of a simple friendliness, a simple caring. It's the quality of metta often translated as loving kindness. We might think of it as being something kind of big, but it begins with just a simple connection, a simple caring. And that connection or caring, the depth of it grows as we recognize or cultivate the capacity to not need anything in return in that caring. This is a challenge for us to explore that possibility of loving, being caring, without needing anything in return. Again, so much of our culture has us in this give and take modality. And so this beginning of exploring this connection quality, we may notice that it has some wanting something in return. And again, looking at that, holding that, not with a repressive kind of energy of shouldn't want something in return, but kind of opening to recognizing, okay, yeah, almost of course I want something in return, and can I hold that with some kindness for myself, even as I explore the possibility of recognizing maybe there can be a caring that doesn't need something in return. What I think stands in our way there is often fear. Something like fear stands in the way of a very open-hearted love. That was true, at least for myself, in some explorations I made around this. At one point, having a kind of a reflection around a relationship where I wanted more in that relationship than the other person did. And so my feelings, I felt like I should shut down some of my feelings to, my mind said these feelings aren't appropriate. And so there was a kind of a shutting down there. And yet I kept having some of these strong feelings and, you know, a feeling of wanting something. I think what I finally began to recognize is that what felt inappropriate partly was that, you know, these feelings that I was feeling seemed to demand that the other person feel something back. And I couldn't demand that the other person feel something back. It was clear that person didn't feel the way I was feeling. And yet at some point, while I was exploring all of this, using mindfulness, again, you know, using mindfulness to explore my own experience, I began to recognize that there was fear in there, fear about the feelings I was feeling. And at some point, my heart just said, what is there to be afraid of? Why, you know, can I just let go of that fear? And when the fear released, there was just this open-hearted connection of well-wishing for that person, a feeling of, oh, I just hope that you are happy without needing something in return. It was a very profound experience. And I would say this was a feeling of unconditional love for one person. I wouldn't say it was the boundless unconditional love that they sometimes talk about in the metta practice, that we can feel a sense of boundless unconditional love for all beings. It wasn't that. But it was a sense of, for that moment, a really deep and powerful well-wishing for another human being without needing anything back. And in that moment, that feeling was so nourishing and so heart-opening that what my mind said was, this is the feeling that I've been looking for. This feeling. This is what I thought I needed to get from somebody else. And it didn't need anybody. In fact, it had to be that unconditional quality. It doesn't need anything in return. It can't want anything in return. And that moment, I would say that moment deeply changed my life. That one moment, just that simple understanding. And I'm certainly not in the space of, like, you know, feeling boundless metta or even that feeling all the time, but it helped me to deeply understand that what I'm looking for is here. That the feeling of love, of belonging, of connection, of caring, the feeling comes, radiates outwards. It's not received this way. And so this this exploration around love can help us to, you know, basically, again, it's so much this Acrobat Sutta for me. You know, it's so much around this looking at myself, looking at relationship, looking at connection, how much there was that protected me and nourished me in that very exploration. And so we can cultivate and explore connection, relationship in our practice, using mindfulness, using practices of generosity, of non-harming, of exploring metta. There are practices, formal practices of metta, which I don't have time to talk about. But we can, you know, just explore well-wishing. You know, at one point I used going into the Safeway as my metta monastery. Every time I went into the Safeway, everybody I saw, I just wished them a simple wish. May you be well. May you be happy. Again, this had a powerful effect on me, a powerful rebound effect on my mind. And so offering that direction had an impact on this being. And so I offer those thoughts for your reflection this evening. And it's time to stop, so thank you for your attention.